on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Wednesday, September 3rd, 2025 edition of InvestTalk, and Labor Day is in the rearview mirror, and soon fall will be upon us. But we're still in the month of September, which historically is a more challenging, more volatile month, and we're getting a bit of that already. But, you know, what does that ultimately mean for, you know, the medium and long term? Because that's what's most important. You know, 1 month doesn't make a market. It's a string of months. And we're here to help you right now and going forward, and help you with lessons that you can take back to your own personal situation and make better decisions, make better risk versus reward decisions, make better decisions for your end goals, and aligning your strategy with your end goals. Because that's what this is all about, is what are your financial goals and how do you ultimately reach them? Sometimes it's being aggressive. Sometimes it's being conservative. It's kind of like driving a car. Sometimes you use the brakes, sometimes you use the pedal, and sometimes you're coasting, right? So that's what you have to decipher for every bucket of money that you might have. And, you know, how does each one of those type of strategies look, depending on your risk tolerance level, the market trends, et cetera. So we're here to unpack all of this and help you take that next step in your own journey towards financial freedom. That's kind of a broad goal that everyone really has. So I'm Justin Klein, and I'm here for you. Answer your finance and investment questions, bringing you perspective and data that help you make better decisions with your money. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics for the hour. But as usual, let's tackle this first caller question now.
Hi, Justin or Luke. I'm calling today about Dell, ticker DELL. There was an earnings report not too long ago, and it did take a hit. I was curious if you think it was an overreaction and it's time to get in now. The numbers still look good. I'm thinking about it as a kind of a growth AI and play on the data centers. It might be good for a longer term hold. Let me know if you think the chart looks okay and if now is a good time to get in. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Looking at Dell Technologies, and it did have a small recent pullback. Nothing big. It's only 16% off its 52-week high. So certainly only a modest pullback. It's 52 highs, about 147. Now we're at 124 and change today, about 1.7% dividend yield. But obviously, most people know what Dell is. It's a company that was one of the first to pioneer your personal computer, laptops back in the 90s. And eventually they went private. Now they went public again. It's still a very profitable company. Return on invested capital around 20%. So that's very good. And is it an AI play? Yeah, I mean, certainly they sell end products that go into these data centers, about $4.8 billion in free cash flow on a market cap of about $84 billion. So that's a very, very good, that's a solid free cash flow yield. So we say about 5% free cash flow yield. And let's take a look at their balance sheet. They have a bit of debt, about $20 billion, but that's not crazy based on a market cap that's going to have $83 billion. It is into support. This was the consolidation period back in the May and June timeframe. So from a technical perspective, it's still off its highs from 2024 when it peaked out. What is that? Around $180 per share. So technically, it's still in a downtrend. But I like that it's taking that cash flow. It's buying back shares consistently. Earnings expectations for next year, $11.06, $124 stock. Earnings expectations continue to go up. That's a positive. So I like it. I am neutral on the technicals, I would say. And the fundamentals are good, but not fantastic, you know, from a valuation perspective. Okay, so if you look at enterprise value to EBITDA is around 10. historically, it trades kind of around here, you know. So I wouldn't say it's over or undervalued. A big swing factor here will be whether or not the AI investment continues at the same pace, because earnings have certainly trended much, much higher since the trough earnings of 48 during the pandemic, 2021. Once again, supposed to make $11 next year. So there is some risk here. We've seen a little bit of the froth come off the AI play. And if that continues, that momentum builds steam, certainly that will spread to names like Dell. So shorter term, I would probably be more neutral. But longer term, I think this is a fair value, good company, good cash flow. So I would give it a thumbs up if I a long-term hold. Now let's pivot over to a live call. I talked to Paul in Monterey looking at GE Vernova.
Hi, Justin. Yeah, I currently hold shares that I have a nice gain on, and I wanted to get your perspective. I was looking for a point to add to my holdings, and it's down pretty good over the last month. And I want to see if you have an opinion on a good buy point.
To buy more, it would need to be much lower. At the bare minimum, it'd probably be around the 440 level. That's where it broke out the highs in early in January of this year. And then it broke out, you know, middle of this year, early summer. So that would be the first major, major support level. This is kind of similar to a lot of the AI plays. You know, that's what's happening here. This is all about electrical power infrastructure to power these AI data centers. That's what's causing their business to boom. And that's great, but it's also puts a risk that if the slowdown of $350 billion per year of investment from the hyperscalers, if that slows down even modestly, that's going to have a large impact on these names and the multiples that it's trading at, because earnings next year will be $12.46. And it's a $577 stock. So you're talking about over 40 times earnings. And frankly, that's a rich valuation, especially it's forward-looking earnings. Okay, it's not even trailing earnings. So this needs to come in pretty substantially for me to get excited from a valuation perspective. And I still think there's substantial risk over the next 12 months that there's going to be some pullback in the AI data infrastructure build-out pace. Still, there will be a lot of it, but is it going to stay at the same pace? Because as I said with last caller, $350 billion is a lot of money. Every single year, these data centers, especially the NVIDIA chips and a lot of what goes inside of them, you know, maybe not the power infrastructure, but a lot of the chips that go inside of them, you know, they're obsolete in 3 or 4 years. And so there's a payback period that it doesn't seem like the industry is creating at the current time. And so I see on the horizon, maybe that's not next month or next quarter, maybe even not next year, but in the next few years, there will be a realization that, hey, you know what? Let's keep investing in it, but maybe not at this pace. And that's going to impact a lot of the names within this space. And GE Vernova is in that crosshairs. So I don't get excited about adding to this without a more realistic level of CapEx spending that is sustainable. I don't think $360 billion from four large companies with the level of innovation or incremental revenue coming from this space, from these tools is justifying justifies the $360 billion a year. So that's my biggest worry. And there's also competitors, right? A Bloom Energy, a lot of the nuclear, you know, small modular reactors and large nuclear facilities as well, which I think GE Vernova is right now serving what is needed today. But, you know, I think there's going to be some volatility here to this growth phase. And so that's why I would be very patient in adding to GE Vernova. Thanks for the call. Yeah, and around 410 to 420 in that range, that would be a good buy area for GE Vernova if you wanted to add to it. Now we're moving into a break. On the other side, I'll preview today's topics and today's market activity, but give me a call now at 888-99-CHART. We all know that working in a small business means that you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. With Upwork, you can find specialized freelancers in marketing, development, design, and more. Experts who are ready to help you take your business to the next level. Companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in the way they staff key projects and initiatives. By accessing a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, AI, design, admin support, marketing, and more. Upwork is a one-stop shop to find, hire, and pay top freelance talent. Upwork can save you time and help keep costs in check. And posting a job on Upwork is easy. There's no cost to join, so you can register and then browse freelancer profiles. Plus, you can get help drafting a job post and even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that understand you. Upwork makes the entire process easier, simpler, and more affordable with industry-low fees. So, post a job today and hire tomorrow with Upwork. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That is Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
2025 rolls on, and you might have some fresh questions for Justin or Luke. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Now, our main focus point today concerns this question. Gen X faces unique retirement challenges, but can they catch up? With strategic planning, Gen X still has a path to financial security, but they have to overcome significant retirement hurdles that previous generations did not have. And many of them have rising debt, limited savings. So we're going to dig into some of the data there. In addition, we'll talk about some of the AI shopping tools that are being built out. On top of that, we're going to take a look at how it's a lot of funds crush it. Yeah, there's some mutual funds that crush, but we're going to look at what that means for future returns. This goes back to chasing returns. I love this topic because so many people do it. So we're going to look at some data on that front as well. And we have voice bank questions. One is on buying stocks for an 11-year-old, and the other is Trade Desk, TTD. We also have questions that came in via the comment section on the InvestTalk YouTube channel as well. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions right now. So don't hesitate to reach out with your questions at 888-99-CHART. Let's take a quick look at the markets today. Overall, it was a positive day, but fairly mixed if you look underneath the hood. You had two big winners on the day. It was Google and Apple. And Google was the big winner because it looks like, based on an antitrust case going through the U.S. government, that they are going to have to share some data and bars them from entering exclusive contracts. But that's not as bad as the market was expecting. There was expectation that they would be barred from those exclusive contracts and have to sell off Chrome, the Chrome business. But they can still do revenue sharing agreements with Apple. So that's the reason Apple was up. $20 billion a year goes from Google to Apple. So that is kind of a symbiotic relationship, helps both of them. And so both of those names really rallied. And that's where the strength in the market was driven from. You had some other winners like Broadcom, Netflix up, Tesla was up. But across other parts of the market, there was certainly mixed. You had names like Oracle and Palantir down. You had a lot in the financial space, especially those around private equity. The KKRs, Blackstones, and Apollos of the world were down decent. BlackRock as well. And you had Wells Fargo, Bank of America, American Express all down decently. Also, the energy names certainly were hurt. Oil down, ExxonMobil down 2.4% on the day. Now, when you look at some other data, you have the JOLTS data, the job openings, and that came in worse than expected. Came in at a little shy of 7.2 million. jobs available. Consensus was supposed to come in at just shy of 2.4 million. So about a 200,000 job miss on that front. So from a hiring perspective, quit rate, layoffs, all of that, that was fairly flat. But once again, it kind of goes along with the labor data that we've seen both out of the BLS report and ADP, et cetera, which is there's not a lot of layoffs, but there's not a lot of hiring either. And that continues to be echoed with this recent report. You also had, what else? Oh, you had the U.S. factory orders that fell in July 1.3% month over month. So that was weak. You have the dollar index down 0.2%. Gold finished up 1.2%. Bitcoin was up also 1.2%. And oil down 2.5% on the day. So that was the market today. Really wasn't a whole lot at the end of the day that you could glean from today's market move outside of those two big movements from Apple and Google. We're going to head to a break, but give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
Your questions are free. The answers are unbiased. Justin Klein is here now, ready to take your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, our main focus point today is about Gen X and how those in this generation face unique retirement challenges that many in older cohorts, boomer generation, as well as younger cohorts, millennials and Gen Z, they don't really have. Now, the first is there are 64 million people in this generation between ages about 45 and 60. Okay. And most of them started working in the 90s. And or maybe late 80s, and this is where pensions were kind of long gone, and 401ks were the new norm, but they didn't have a lot of features that helped that generation. For example, automatic participation, which generally is the standard now. So a lot of them, especially in their younger years, didn't save consistently. They were busy living their young, fun lives and didn't think retirement was a priority and didn't have those features that automatically opted them into these programs. So a lot of them are behind the eight ball because of that. And then you got on top of that the fact that almost all of them lived through the dot-com bust, the Great Recession, and the pandemic, all three in the span of, you know, just 20 years. And that's put a lot of them in credit card debt more than any other generation. So it's a generation that has to catch up. Now, the good thing is most of them are pretty resilient and self-reliant because they had to be. And so a lot of them have started to save more recently and really, really buckle down. And a lot of them are entrepreneurs. A lot of them started their own businesses as well. And a lot of them are also willing to work longer and okay with it, especially now that many people are living longer. What's helped them most, though, this generation is most of them are homeowners. Yeah, they didn't get it in the early 80s when, for the most part, like a lot of the boomer generation did. But they got in, you know, maybe they bought homes in the 90s. Maybe early aughts before the real boom in real estate. But they have a lot of equity in their homes. Now, young Gen Xers are kind of in their 40s, and some of them will actually benefit from the boomer generation, their parents, passing down a hefty sum. So that's also something that will be a tailwind for the average Gen Xer. But what do you do now is the question. No matter where you're sitting, if you're a Gen Xer, whether you're going to get an inheritance, maybe you've got one, maybe you have a lot of equity in your home, maybe you don't. What can you do to improve your situation? Now, number one is most are over 50 and can now contribute catch-up contributions, whether that's in your 401k or your IRA. So that's number one. Number two is that equity that most of them have, most Gen Xers have, is it allows them some flexibility. They can relocate to lower cost of living areas. I have an older cousin that is technically a Gen Xer, a young Gen Xer. And he was lucky enough to move from Southern California, moved to Idaho right before the pandemic and kind of caught it at the right time, but to a lower cost of living state. And even if you don't want to live at a state or a lower cost of living area, a lot of them are now becoming empty nesters, right? Their kids are growing up and getting off to college, and it allows for downsizing. And I think that is a smart move for a lot of people, whether Gen Xer, boomer or not. There's just a lot of equity in homes, especially the more expensive homes. And you can really unlock the earnings potential, income potential of that money and get into a home that, yeah, maybe doesn't have the nostalgia that current home has, but certainly has enough size and amenities and maybe location that fits a lifestyle of somebody that is maybe approaching retirement or in retirement. And I think that's something everyone should probably look at. Now, then it comes to Social Security. So that equity also can allow for Social Security to continue to build and put off collecting Social Security till at least full retirement age. I think most people should do that. And maybe even all the way till 70. Depends on everyone's situation. That's where planning comes in and an advisor like us or, you know, hopefully a fiduciary, whoever you're working with, can kind of dial this plan in. It's something we do for clients, not just the investment side, but also Roth conversions and Social Security planning and downsizing a home, modeling that out, et cetera. Something that every advisor should be able to help their clients with. Okay. So this is a very important piece that a lot of Gen Xers maybe not worrying about right now, but quickly approaching that potential of taking Social Security. And I think lastly, it's really about not just running the numbers, but visualizing a plan, visualizing a lifestyle that will make you happy in retirement. It's not just about the numbers, it's qualitative factors, your connection to friends and family and community, all of that. And putting that down either in words or in pictures and shooting for that particular lifestyle. And so I think that's the last step in the retirement planning that I think everybody should think about. We're heading into a break. I'm ready to take your calls now, 888-99-CHART. There are some things you don't need to splurge on, but a high-quality mattress isn't one of them. Think about it. You sleep on your mattress every night for years, and the value of good quality sleep impacts your daily routine, so it should never be taken for granted. Avocado Green Mattress is made with superior craftsmanship, better materials, and thoughtful design, so Avocado stays supportive and comfortable for the long haul. And you'll be glad to know that Avocado is committed to maintaining the highest standards of ethical and transparent practices. That means eco-conscious production, using renewable, certified organic materials. In fact, every avocado mattress is made from certified organic latex, wool, and cotton. Breathable, non-toxic materials that keep you cooler than synthetic alternatives throughout the night. In case you were wondering, Avocado Green Mattress is a bestseller that comes in three different comfort options: firm, medium, or plush. To make your purchase more accessible, there are easy financing options with Affirm. Plus, you can take advantage of up to 1 year sleep trials and generous warranties. To try before you buy, visit one of the Avocado retail stores or Premier Retail Partners to experience the comfort in person. When you want unmatched comfort and support, exceptional quality, and better sleep, look into Avocado Green Mattress. Head to avocadogreenmattress.com today and save up to 20% on certified organic mattresses during their Labor Day sale. Avocado, dream of better.
The calls are free. The unbiased answers are free. So what are you waiting for? Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, gentlemen. This is David from San Jose, calling regarding the stock, the Trade Desk, stock symbol TTD. I read an article on it that said it has promise. I just thought it took a dive recently. I'd like to get your ideas on it and crunching the numbers, if it's a good stock to buy. Thank you. Look forward to hearing your answer on air.
All right. Looking at the Trade Desk, and it's a platform for it helps with self-service and cloud-based ad buying. So that's what the platform does. And it's a name that had been growing consistently, but that growth has certainly slowed. A year ago, earnings were growing 39% and revenues are up 26%. And you had consistency there. But last quarter, revenues grew 19%, which sounds great. But then you look at earnings, they were only up 5% year over year. So you're seeing a sharp slowdown in growth. And when a name is trading a high multiple, which it was back at the end of last year, its 52-week high is $141 per share. Now it's down to $53.77, down 62% from its 52-week high. So the multiple is contracted considerably, and earnings are expected to fall 50% this year to 82 cents. And it's a $53 stock. So that's the issue here. It's trading at just way too high a multiple. And there are too many, I think, longer term variables with this name to value it at $26 billion. That's a great balance sheet. That's good. Good cash flow of $745 million. But once again, earnings are expected to be cut in half. What is that going to do to cash flow? What is that going to do to profitability, which is good right now at 15%? But once again, earnings are expected to fall this year. And that's my issue, is it's just trading at way too high of a multiple. Let's take a look here. Its price to sales ratio is still 10 times. We know anything, when you hit 10 or more, it's going to be hard to grow into that level of valuation. It's very hard when your earnings are expected to be cut in half, right? So that's an issue. Enterprise value to EBITDA is around 44. You know, this is a name that probably should be trading in the teens, not 44, an enterprise value to EBITDA basis. And then you talk about the risks to its business of AI, for example, and I see zero reason to be owning this. It's in a downtrend. Its recent earnings, it fell from, you know, the high 80s to the mid 50s, and it's been sitting there. And when it sits there for a while, it is bearishly consolidating, which means its next leg is probably lower. So I see no reason to be picking up Trade Desk at these levels or at this time. Thanks for the call. Let's go with another YouTube comment section question. Nautilus49 says, Dan from Chicago, love the show. Great content. What are your thoughts on Kava Group and Sweetgreens buying for long-term hold in a Roth account? Let's take a look at Kava and Sweetgreens. These are both restaurant chain brands. The first thing I always think of when you have a recent IPO of a restaurant chain is, what are previous restaurant chains have they've done? And you could point to a handful of groups like a Brinker. Think of Olive Garden and all those brands. And you think of Chipotle, McDonald's, and there are plenty that have held on and remained consistent. But they all slow down in growth, and there have been plenty out there that have just completely failed in their model. And I always worry about the ones that just don't make money. Now, the good thing with Kava, at least, is it's profitable. Recent IPO in 2023, and it's still up from its IPO, but recently it's been in a sharp downtrend. It peaked out around $170 per share. This was back in, what was this, late last year. And so it's down 61.8% from its 52-week high, trading at $65.91. Its relative strength is 6. That means it's outperformed only 6% of the market over the past year. That is pretty bad performance. And then you look at earnings expectations, 56 cents this year, 68 cents next year. Both of those estimates continue to trend down from analysts, and it's a $65 stock. So even based on forward-looking earnings, it's trading at nearly 100 times forward-looking multiple, and growth has slowed. It peaked out in revenue growth in the third quarter of last year at 39% year-over-year revenue growth. Now, last quarter, we're at 20%. And back then, earnings were going 150%. Well, last quarter, earnings were up only 14%. And next quarter, earnings are expected to fall 12%. No dividend, and frankly, it's just trading at way too expensive a price. Okay, so that's Kava. And then I move over to Sweetgreen. Sweetgreen's has been around a little bit longer, and this is a much easier one to decipher because guess what? Its relative strength is 2. It's even worse than Kava, and it's losing money. It's never made money. It is a model that does not work. It is probably a bankruptcy candidate. It went public in 2021 when the market craze was happening, around $50 per share. Now we're at $8.91. This is a better short, probably a fantastic short, to be honest with you, because this is probably a name that eventually goes bankrupt. Now, they don't have a lot of debt, not a ton of debt, but the free cash flow is negative, profitability is negative. And what are they? Why does this continue to go down? Because they just issue more and more shares consistently. So it's probably going to be, the shareholders are probably diluted to oblivion until this eventually goes bankrupt. And so I think both are good shorts. I think it's much better short. Kava at least makes money, but it's still trading at an egregious valuation. So from an investment standpoint, you should stay far, 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 far away from both of these. And however you came across these two for a potential purchase, you need to flip that process 180 and go in a completely different direction because both of these are terrible, terrible investments. Thanks for the call. Now, speaking of shifts in industries and terrible investments, and kind of this actually harkens back to the previous question around Trade Desk, and it's about the rise of AI agents and especially around shopping. And I think this is going to be an area where AI will disrupt the most industries, or the most companies, shall we say. And it's around online shopping. Why? Because this is a space that is easily analyzed by an AI chatbot or an AI agent because the data is there. It's everywhere online. Product description, product name, right? Product number, price. All of this is pretty easy for an AI agent or bot to decipher. And I think we're in an age, we're in an era now where when you're looking at companies that heavily rely on online shopping, like an Amazon, I think there's a strong likelihood that AI will greatly disrupt their business. Now, years ago, Amazon is a good example. It used to be a relatively cheap place to go buy products. But over time, if you actually go look at it, they've done studies. It's not really the cheapest place for most things. Now, is it expensive? You know, for most things, no. But it tends to be kind of in the middle. And Amazon has their own algorithms and AI that kind of helps price that. But as AI comes along and you're using more of these chatbots, whether that's ChatGPT or Perplexity or whatever, I think this is a space that it will help the average person find the best price, find the best product, and will likely shrink the margins of those companies that rely heavily on online shopping. For example, OpenAI's plans to take a cut from online product sales made directly through ChatGPT and have a checkout feature, which built into it, where you can tell them what you're looking for, They can help go find the best price on that particular product, and you can check out right then and there. And they'll take, you know, a small fee for that. But that would be part of the use case and make it a lot easier to go and find the best price instead of having 20 tabs open from different websites. AI can easily go and find all of them and get you the best price. Perplexity, they recently launched a browser called Comet. I actually downloaded it. I haven't extensively used it because I use Perplexity a lot. For me, it's one of my favorite AI tools. But right there, you can complete tasks across different apps on your desktop, like a calendar, websites, emails, all of that. So you're going to more and more be able to do different things within these applications that you would have traditionally done by going directly to the website or directly to the app within your computer. And Google has a new AI mode that brings up different product options. And they released an AI product tracker, which will alert you when the price of something dropped to a certain level, right? You might say, I want to buy this. Let me know if it gets below this price. It'll alert you, and then you can go and make that purchase. And from a marketing standpoint, things are changing as well. Marketers are now adopting methods to improve the likelihood of those items showing up in AI-generated results. For example, it's more important now that bots are that you have technical details and you have product descriptions because that's what these bots are looking at. Okay, so it's not just having the best price. It's making sure that when the bot searches the internet, it's able to clearly identify that this is the product that the end user is looking for. So it's not about the best pictures as much anymore. It's more about clear text advertising maybe and helping it appear within these chatbot results. So this goes back to Trade Desk. Right? Are they doing that? Is that part of their platform? Okay, is it changing the dynamics within the ad industry? And brands are going to need to prepare for a world where a lot of purchases, even most purchases eventually, will be done by a chat bot or an agent rather than individuals going to the website. So being ranked number one in a search on Amazon won't be nearly as important anymore because it won't be the person looking for it, right? It'll be the bot. And the person will just be explaining to the chat agent that, hey, this is what I want. I want this product with this feature. Maybe they want a specific product from a specific company. Maybe they want certain price, certain features, right? Whether that's power, speed, whatever that might be. And it could be a world where what shop you go to, what website you go to, matters far less. You want toilet paper delivered to your door? Before it used to be, hey, I'm going to go to Amazon because Amazon Prime is going to get me it to my door tomorrow or the next day. Well, a bot can tell you maybe another site that's cheaper and get it in the same time. And so I think you have to increasingly think more and more about how this technology is going to impact different industries. And I think the online retail industry is going to be drastically transformed over the next 5 to 10 years. Now let's keep things moving and head back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank. You know the number, it's 888-99-CHART.
I'm hoping Justin can help explain a complicated ETF I got myself into that I don't really understand. It goes by IVOL. And that's the Quadratic Interest Rate Volatility and Inflation Hedge ETF. It invests in TIP and also long options on TIPs to generate more returns. Thanks so much for helping me make sense of this. Bye-bye.
This is the Quadratic Interest Rate Volatility and Inflation Hedged ETF. IVOL is the symbol. And there are more and more of these kind of complex strategy, complex ETFs that are out there that I think can be used for traders, for short-term bets. Would I own this long-term? Probably not, especially the expense ratio. It's over 1%. Okay, that's pretty expensive. And this is a name that's actually gone up pretty nicely since from the beginning of the year, around $17 back then. Now it's trading at $20. So nice, decent return. Like you said, they buy tips. They own, let's see, what do they have? Yeah, 82% is fixed income. 17% is cash or cash-like equivalents. Let me look at some other. Yeah, they have Schwab Tips ETF is 68% of the portfolio. So, it looks like they're buying, some other type of derivatives that make a bet on the market pricing and higher inflation. And that makes sense. That makes sense based on the title of the ETF or the name of the ETF. And it makes sense why it's gone up, because inflation expectations have been rising this year for various reasons. Weaker dollar, tariffs, etc. You said you got yourself into it, you don't understand it, then you should sell it. If you don't understand what you're invested in, just sell it. Move on. Make sure you understand the strategy that you are invested in. I don't mind it, once again, for a short-term trade, and it's certainly trending positively, but I would just sell it because you don't understand it and the fee is pretty high. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein, and we have one goal each and every weekday, and it's to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break, so give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
Invest Talk. Your questions are free. The answers are unbiased. Justin Klein is here now, 888-99-CHART.
Now, every day, we receive questions from the comments section of the Invest Talk YouTube channel, and here's one that came in earlier. KMaximus13 says, Kenny from Philadelphia, looking for advice on Avalon Bay, close to 50-week low, what would be a good price point? Avalon Bay, this is a REIT that is in the, it's an apartment REIT, okay? And it's one of the better apartment REITs out there if you're talking about profitability longer term. Funds from operation expected to go up 3% this year, 4% next year, 3.6% dividend yield, $27 billion market cap. And they have about 86,000 apartment homes in over 284 different apartment communities throughout the United States. And you're right, it has been trending down as of late, but it's starting to gain a little bit of traction, especially off its recent low, double bottom, right around $180 per share. Now we're at $191. So yeah, if you're looking for a good entry point, I do think this is a good place for that. It is at some good longer term support, especially if you're looking at its previous breakout area was here right around the 185 level. So I think there's some good support down below. And then if you look at valuations, enterprise value to EBITDA is right at about 19. It typically bottoms out around 18. So if you look at the last 3 years, the range is between about 24 and 18. And now we're at 19 and change. So it's certainly on the lower end of its multiple range. And like I said, one of the better REITs that are out there, return equity is right around 10%, which for the average company isn't huge, but REITs tend to have relatively, you know, kind of mid to high single digit return on equity. And the fact that this is kind of right in that 10% range shows how well run it is. And we like this space overall. Now, I think we can squeeze in one more caller question now.
My question would be, in my 401k, since I have limited investment options, looking at the slight terminal market in right now, between small, mid, and large cap funds, how would you allocate your fixed percentage of money? You know, my risk being slightly higher since I'm younger, I don't mind some higher risk. Appreciate all the help, guys. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Now, this is a great question, especially an interesting one, considering small caps have started to outperform as of late. Now, for the average younger person, I would say small mid cap is a good place to be. It depends on your risk tolerance level. Mid caps have the best long-term risk versus reward, meaning they tend to be not quite as volatile as a small caps, because small caps, there's a lot of names that don't make money in there. They have bad balance sheets. Many of them can go bankrupt because of that. They are small, so they maybe not they don't have the entrenched economic advantages and moats that maybe the mid and smaller cap, smaller and large cap, mid and large cap names tend to have. Mid caps, they've grown out of those smaller names, which means they've gained some level of traction within their industry. And they probably have some sort of economic moat. They oftentimes have better balance sheets and ability to raise capital than those smaller names. And many times their leaders are better and have been able to kind of get them to this place where, you know, they have market caps in the tens of billions of dollars as opposed to the single digit billions of dollars. And so over the long term, mid caps have kind of that best risk versus reward. Now, right now, like I said, small caps are starting to outperform. The gap between small caps and especially large caps from a valuation perspective are much, much larger. And so you're getting oftentimes much better opportunities, much better valuations with those small cap names. So I would probably lean into the small caps, especially with the dollar declining. It's going to make domestic manufacturing businesses, domestic businesses in general, more competitive worldwide. Whereas those larger names, they tend to already be worldwide. They tend to already have a lot of foreign currency exposure, and foreign exposure in general, especially with kind of the volatility of domestic policy around tariffs. A lot of them are dealing with that. So I like those small and mid-cap names right now a bit over the large cap, especially the large cap growth, where there's a lot more valuation. Well, that about does it. I'm Justin Klein, and if today's show made you think about your own financial picture in any way, well, that's your investments, your downsizing strategy, your Social Security strategy, your Roth conversion strategy, whatever it is around planning, retirement, taxes, I encourage you to head over to investtalk.com, schedule a call with myself or Luke, and we can go over whatever is on your mind, your portfolio, what your goals are. Start to build out that plan so, you know, you can ultimately achieve that, your own version of financial freedom. That's what this show is really about, bring clarity and confidence to what your path forward is. So once again, head over to investtalk.com, click on the portfolio review button, and we thank you for listening. And we encourage you to tell your friends, family about our free podcast downloads, which can always be found on iTunes or Spotify, or head over to YouTube and check out the InvestTalk YouTube channel as well. And we always enjoy a rating over on iTunes. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.